offer that opportunity to anybody that wants to come out. You know, so we teach them how to run these cameras. We teach them how to be in the right place at the right time, and how to make a change. And, you know, it also shows people that they're worth, you know, that we need them, that they're part of something bigger. And together, when we all work together, we can fight for this change in a united way. And that's something that I'm very proud of that we've done for the last 18 years. I think the one thing that the Buffalo teach us is how to live together again, how to respect and honor our diversity as a strength instead of another dividing and conquering ourselves. We don't need a house full of clones of people. We need diversity and people that think outside the box, that want to create change for the good of all people, not just for their little clique of people.
Yeah, it seems like the governor of Montana never saw this coming, never expected this. They plan to just go ahead with the slaughter undetected. It's winter. Who's going to be out there? No one's watching. Just go ahead and slaughter them. We've got just a couple more minutes. I want to ask Goodshill a little bit more about music, activism, art, and how what a powerful tool all of this is in protecting what's really of value. The rest of this are the trappings of malls and whatnot. That's worthless. But what you are about, that has abiding value. Can you talk a bit about that, Goodshill?
Yeah, for me, I mean, grew up with a lot of musicians in my family, so music was kind of natural for me. I was very shy growing up, you know, but like, I don't know, family members and friends who know me from growing up can't believe I stand in front of people and play music and talk, you know. But for me, it was just, you know, it was something I knew I had to do. Like, I knew as a young age I wanted to make a big change in the world, and the Buffalo kind of brought me out of my shell, you know, so to speak. And, the music is, you know, it's taken me different places. And I feel that music makes things a little more palatable sometimes for, you know, because we could talk about killing buffalo and this and that. But I don't know. It's a very depressing subject, you know, so I feel like using the music in a good way could help make it a little bit easier to digest and hopefully motivate somebody, you know, to do something.
Take the opportunity to be at the Bison Coffee House on Wednesday the 23rd at 7 p.m. You will be able to hear Goodshill Eguia and Mignon Gailey play live. And with Mike Meese with the Buffalo Field Campaign, the roadshow is coming to Portland.
The time is 6:02, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Coming up next is a special program about free trade migration and modified genes called Corn at the Crossroads, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30 and Hardnark or River Signal at 7, so please stay tuned. This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, New Year's Day, 2008. The North American Free Trade Agreement comes into full effect today with the cancellation of all remaining tariffs and so-called trade barriers protecting Mexican agricultural products. The trade deal, which began to come into force on the 1st of January 1994, has been largely blamed for the ongoing crisis in the Mexican countryside, the growing disparity between rich and poor, and the unprecedented rate of migration of Mexicans towards the United States. Join us today as we take a look at the intersection of culture, food, migration, and trade. I'm Mara Bogado. Stay with us. Little has been said about the effects of NAFTA on corn, the foundation of the Mexican diet, the staple crop of the countryside, and the symbol of Mesoamerican identity. In this exclusive FSRN documentary, Shannon Young and Vladimir Flores take us to Oaxaca, Mexico, for Corn at the Crossroads, Free Trade, Migration, and Modified Genes in the Cradle of Maize. In southern Mexico, corn is much more than a simple source of calories for the human body. It represents life itself. The creation myth of Mesoamerican culture, the Popol Vuh, tells of how the gods struggled to make thinking, feeling human beings. After two failed attempts with mud and wood, the gods finally succeeded when they crafted the first people from the dough and kernels of white and yellow corn. Mesoamerican cultures regard the plant as sacred, and many indigenous small farmers, or campesinos, pay their respects with rites and customs from the sowing of the seeds until well after the harvest. This Zapotec farmer from Oaxaca's Sierra Juarez describes a few of the customs that have endured since before the time of the Spanish invasion.
Se siembra uno para el animalito, uno para...
One is planted for the little animal, one for the family, one for the townspeople, and one for the festival. It was in this way that the agricultural education returned to the heart of the family. Why? Because those who came here destroyed the schools where the lessons of how to attend to the maize were given. Maize is sacred. You can't sweep maize with a broom, because it said that if you sweep maize, maize will abandon you. You can neither put a flame to the cob. You have to be careful. Why? Because it's life. It's the baby of the house, as we say in our language. With so much love given to maize, sometimes it can seem to one as exaggerated, but it's not so. It's the way a man acts when one knows that it's the food which gives him life.
Cuando sabe que ese es el alimento que le da vida.
The strong connection between humans and maize in Oaxaca is the legacy of millennia of coexistence. It was here that corn was first domesticated from its wild ancestor more than 7,000 years ago. Maize cannot grow without human help, and it's impossible to imagine humans here growing without maize. One can find corn in nearly all of its many forms in Oaxaca's bustling central market, tortillas and tamales, the tejate drink, even non-edible products like handcrafts from corn husks or necklaces with lacquered seeds. Corn is the main staple crop in Mexico. Every part of the plant has a use, from the kernels to the leaves. Farm animals consume what humans can't, and even the roots themselves play a role in the maintenance of soil ecology. Maize is an integral part of the larger system of regional biodiversity and a cornerstone of the network between humans, food, and the land. Most of the arable land in Oaxaca is owned by communities, not individuals. Land redistribution was the central demand of Mexican revolutionary hero Emiliano Zapata. The agrarian reform he advocated made it into the Constitution as Article 27. In practice, it transferred ownership of large plantations or haciendas to those who worked the land. It also protected the system of communal land ownership in many rural communities. In January of 1992, then-President Carlos Salinas de Gortari announced reforms to the Mexican Constitution as part of negotiations for what later became the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Luego de muchos años de crisis en el campo, alentamos una nueva reforma agraria de los propios campesinos.
After many years of crisis in the countryside, we have brought forth a new agrarian reform from the very campesinos, made for and by them. The change to Article 27 of the Constitution will give security and freedom to the campesinos to decide for themselves what they want to do with their land. Second, it will provide more resources to stimulate production and improve campesino livelihood. We will soon see the Mexican countryside emerge vigorous and renewed.
Pronto veremos al campo mexicano emerger vigoroso y renovado.
Critics of the reform said it turned land into just another commodity and buried the fundamental gain of the Mexican Revolution. The first phase of NAFTA took effect on January 1st of 1994. During New Year's celebrations with fireworks, music, and parties, an indigenous rebel army mobilized to take over five key towns in the southern state of Chiapas. The date chosen for the armed uprising was no coincidence. The Zapatista Army of National Liberation, or EZLN,
called NAFTA a death sentence. Soon after the start of their uprising, the EZLN took over large landholdings in Chiapas and redistributed them to landless campesinos. Comandante Kelly, one of the military leaders of the EZLN, speaking about the Zapatistas' so-called revolutionary agrarian law.
Thanks to this revolutionary recuperation of land and territory, thousands of Zapatista and non-Zapatista families exist where, before 1994, they had been stripped of their lands, of their lives, and of their autonomy. Today, these people and these families have land to work, land for building community, land for a better future for indigenous, campesino, and rural people. The land and territory are more than sources of work and food. They are also culture, community, history, ancestors, dreams, future, life, and mother.
Ancestros, sueños, futuro, vida y madre.
Indigenous communities in Mexico administer land as a commonwealth. Decisions about land use are subject to debate within the collective governance structures known as popular assemblies. But the reforms to Article 27 turned communal land into a collection of individual pieces of private real estate that can be rented or sold. More than 15 years after Salinas de Gortari promised the reforms would renew and invigorate the Mexican countryside, current President Felipe Calderón is advising small farmers to look for other forms of income, like in this speech given in late November to campesinos in the state of Jalisco.
We want you to have an income different from primary agricultural work. We want you to have a different source of income by opening a grocery store, a carpentry or sewing workshop, or a tortilla store. We want you to have tourism projects. We want the beauty of the land where you live to be known by Mexico and the world, and for you to all be technically prepared to give the people the services that they need, to maintain, for example, bathrooms and service facilities in good conditions, because this is what tourists really appreciate.
NAFTA has put Mexican campesinos into direct competition with U.S. agribusiness, in the agrarian equivalent of a race between a Porsche and a donkey cart. U.S. subsidized corn has been dumped onto the Mexican market at prices that undercut the cost of production for small farmers, thereby creating enormous financial pressure to find work elsewhere. Mexico now ranks as the world's top exporter of migrant labor. This student activist from Chiapas explains the rationale many young people have for abandoning the countryside.
Most of the young people are in the United States because their parents can no longer support them, since all of the products from the countryside no longer have a good price. So, all the young campesinos, instead of studying, say, I'm going north because I can't make it here anymore. Then they emigrate northwards.
Sergio Rodriguez Lascano, editor of the pro-Zapatista magazine Rebeldía, says the reform to Article 27 ended up making the countryside dependent upon migration and remittances.
The idea behind that reform was to generate a spatial readjustment for capital with the following characteristics: to bring about a new process of separating producers from the means of production, thereby generating a labor surplus to be channeled toward migration to the United States, fracturing the old social fabric. In return, what does these workers produce? The second most important source of revenue in the form of remittances, $24 billion last year, and the development of an internal market, because without those remittances, it will be impossible to maintain the Mexican countryside.
The migration stream has virtually emptied rural towns of working-age men. Stricter enforcement at the U.S.-Mexico border has made clandestine crossing very risky and expensive. As a result, immigration has become more of a one-way trip. This has had a profound impact on the social fabric of Mexico's rural communities. Wives are separated from their husbands, children grow up without their fathers, and parents die without saying goodbye to their sons.
The social structure, the social fabric is incredibly important, actually indispensable, to retain the biological fabric of the planet.
Dr. Ignacio Chapela is a microbial ecologist and professor at the University of California at Berkeley.
The impact of migration and the breakup of these communities and their social structures is so damaging, not only from the social point of view. Even if I was not interested in people, I would say that for the sake of the biological diversity, we're really messing up the system of support of that diversity by breaking down that social fabric.
Dr. Chiappella is perhaps best known for an article he published with David Quist in the prestigious peer-reviewed scientific journal, Nature. The two researchers found evidence in 2001 that genetically engineered traits had mixed with or contaminated land races of native corn in the Sierra Juarez in Oaxaca's northern mountains. This despite an official moratorium on the cultivation of GE crops within Mexico. Detractors linked to the biotechnology industry created enough pressure to have the paper withdrawn on a technicality. But the article's central thesis, that lab-modified genes had mixed with native corn in its center of origin, has been confirmed with studies by Mexican public institutions, as well as by campesino groups that have sent samples for testing. One such group is the Union of Organizations of the Sierra Juarez of Oaxaca, or UNOSJO. UNOSJO member Baldomero Mendoza says that in 2005, samples were already showing evidence of transgenic traits stacked on top of each other.
In the Sierra Juarez, transgenic contamination from three different proteins were found. Corn classified as an insecticide corn for animal consumption only, and transgenic corn with an herbicide resistance. And unfortunately, in Guelatao, we found a sample that had all three characteristics. This leaves us with the understanding that transgenic contamination has been happening for many years, and not since public institutions confirmed the contamination in the Sierra Juarez.
Farmers have for millennia crossbred maize varieties in order to enhance desired traits. Genetic engineering, however, can only happen in a laboratory. The process of using a gene gun to shoot a sequence of code into the DNA of a host organism can result in the combination of genetic information from entirely different biological kingdoms. For example, BT corn contains genetic information from a bacterium, a mix that would not be possible in nature. This perceived tampering with the natural order has raised stiff opposition from some members of Oaxaca's religious community. Mercedes Garcia Lara is a Catholic nun who often travels in rural areas and has collected corn samples for genetic testing.
We took samples in three regions, in the Central Valleys, in the Sierra Sur, and in the Mixteca. And in the three regions, the maize came out contaminated with different genes. The most worrisome was the starlink, which we know is not for human consumption, whose presence was unknown, and we don't know who is eating it.
BT corn is one of two types of GE corn on the market. It expresses an insecticide trait found in a soil-dwelling bacteria. Some types of BT corn are for animal consumption only. The other form of GE corn is engineered to have a resistance to herbicides like Roundup. Roundup is a weed killer manufactured by Monsanto, which is also the world's leading producer of genetically modified seeds. The other companies that hold patent rights to most of the world's biotech seeds are Dow, DuPont, Novartis, and Bayer. This concentration of seed ownership has been one of several issues fueling the worldwide controversy over GE agriculture. Areli Carrion is with Greenpeace Mexico.
This constant invasion of a technology that is patented, that is owned by a company, is a growing process of privatization of seeds and also of control of the production of the food. And the one that controls food controls politics and controls liberties. And this is the freedom to plant, the freedom to harvest, the freedom of the ownership of their own seeds.
Farmers have always saved seeds from their harvest to plant the following season. But farmers who want to use biotech seeds must pay a licensing fee to plant them. If patented genes appear in a crop without a license, even if by consequence of cross-pollination, the patent holder can sue the owner of the field. Campaigners warn these intellectual property lawsuits could start to pop up in Mexico if the government loosens restrictions on GMO cultivation.
The best way of avoiding having private corporations monopolizing the intellectual property of the genes is to make the information public.
Jean-Philippe Vielcalzada is a developmental geneticist at Mexico's National Laboratory of Genomics for Biodiversity. The publicly funded laboratory last year concluded a project to sequence the genome of Mexican popcorn and plans to do the same with other key domestic crops.
The idea is to basically protect nationally the rights of genes that would be important for Mexican maize, and make the whole information public later, which allows other nations to use the information freely and use it for agronomical improvement purposes.
Listening to an FSRN exclusive documentary, Corn at the Crossroads, Free Trade, Migration, and Modified Genes in the Cradle of Maize, produced by Shannon Young and Vladimir Flores. Stay tuned.
Biotechnology has been used for pharmaceutical purposes without much controversy. For example, the production of insulin for diabetes patients is faster and cheaper thanks to biotechnology. But its application for agricultural purposes has provoked an intense international debate. Opponents also say genetically engineered crops were not sufficiently tested to prove they pose no threat to human health, but rather were approved by officials at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration amidst allegations of influence peddling. The European Union, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and China have approached the technology with caution. But the U.S. position that GE crops pose no significant threat has been influential in the crafting of legislation in developing countries with close trade ties to the U.S. Dr. Viel Calzada describes the criteria Mexico's National Genomics Laboratory uses when deciding between the two strategies of traditional breeding and genetic engineering.
The first criteria has now become public opinion. When it comes to modifying crops like maize for human consumption, one has become quite cautious. There is also worry in the public opinion and in the political sector that genetic engineering of maize might affect the native maize varieties that are in Mexico by changing their genetic constitution through natural crossing in the fields. The rest of the criteria have to do with the yeast that a crop, in this case maize, has to be transformed. Not all varieties are easy to be transformed, and therefore one has to consider in which genetic background the gene has to be inserted. And thirdly, it has to do also with how important it is to develop a technology in a short time frame, or if one can wait and have many years being invested on a more complex combination of traits. At this time, genetic engineering allows you to basically insert one gene at a time, and we cannot control the location where the gene will be inserted. If an improvement requires a combination of genes being present within a plant, one has to consider traditional improvement.
Mexico issued a moratorium on the cultivation of GE crops in 1998, but partially lifted the ban in 2005 with the approval of the National Biosecurity Law, which permits limited commercialization of transgenics. A group of large producers in northern Mexico who want to plant GE crops have organized to pressure the government to loosen biosecurity restrictions. They say farmers hit hard by the crisis in the Mexican countryside should have the option of turning to biotech crops without having to navigate the bureaucracy to get a planting permit. These producers are optimistic that GE seeds can help to improve crop yields and make their operations more competitive. Back in the cornfields of Oaxaca, resistance to transgenic crops remains strong. Aldo González is with the Union of Organizations of the Sierra Juarez of Oaxaca.
Nosotros no sabíamos que eran los transgénicos.
We didn't know what transgenics were. We had to investigate what transgenics were. And well, we realized that transgenics are not only seeds that have been genetically modified, but that they also had different types of implications. Those that have been mentioned now are primarily the biological, economic, and political implications, but there are also cultural implications.
Pero también hay implicaciones de carácter cultural.
One tradition that has been gradually disappearing throughout Mexico is the practice of making handmade tortillas. The tortilla is the most common form that corn takes in Mexico. Two domestic agribusiness giants, Maseca and Minsa, dominate the supply of corn flour to the country's tortillerias. Machine-made tortillas are many times cheaper than their handmade counterparts. Most of the women who go door-to-door in Oaxaca City with their baskets of tortillas are over the age of 40 and are becoming a less common sight. This resident of the Sierra Juarez Mountains says the vanishing custom isn't just limited to the cities.
When the young women find out there's some tortilla machines nearby, they opt to no longer prepare their corn for grinding, make the nixtamal mix, make the tortillas by hand, and save themselves that work. But the young people don't realize that that's where we end up eliminating a part of our culture, a custom.
The taste and texture of handmade tortillas is significantly different from that of the ones made by machine, and demand is still high enough to fill the local markets with women selling their handcrafted tortillas, blandas and tlayudas.
¿Tlayudas o blandas?
¿Quieres blandas?
¡Blandas!
One of the best places for handmade tortillas in Oaxaca City is Itanoni, a restaurant featuring dishes made from an impressive selection of native corn. The restaurant's owner, Amado Ramirez, says eating here helps to connect urban consumers to the countryside and to the legacy of maize.
Los consumidores urbanos realmente desconocen.
Urban consumers really, really don't know about the meaning of maize, even Mexicans. And, well, we're talking about something profound when we talk about maize. For many Mexicans, all corn is equal, as if the only differences are in color. Other very obvious things go unrecognized. For example, every maize has a flavor, a texture, a smell, a personality, completely different from the other, depending on the agroecological zone in which it was developed, and the group of people with which it was raised. From this wide diversity of maizes, we have selected a few, like we select our friends. We have corn from sea level up to the mountains, and from this great diversity, we have chosen some of the best, which are best adapted, according to our tastes, to each one of our appetizers.
Que son los que mejor se adaptan según nuestro gusto. A cada uno de los antojitos.
Microbial ecologist Ignacio Chapela says this biodiversity is the result of ancient networks that continue to link humans and maize, with farmers selecting specific plant characteristics for different human needs.
The crops that we have are there, the diversity that we have is there, because it's followed the very specific evolutionary pathway that we would never be able to repeat. So in that sense, the loss is so much bigger. Because it's something that is not, like people think, a renewable resource. You know, plants' genetic diversity is not renewable in that sense. We cannot retrace our steps and think, oh, well, we have storage of seeds somewhere and we'll be able to pull them out if we're in trouble. We won't. We need to keep that network alive.
Despite the economic pressure to abandon traditional farming and migrate, many Oaxacan campesinos continue to cultivate their relationship with maize. To a certain extent, the perceived threat to the maize land races by transgenic corn has sparked a renewed appreciation for the native varieties in southern Mexico. Zeferino Clemente Garcia helped to organize a recent festival for native corn in the Zapotec town of Teotitlan del Valle, about 30 minutes outside of Oaxaca City.
Se tiene bien documentado de que aquí, por la cueva Gilana Kits, Geoji, también en Zapoteco Río Salado.
It's well documented that the first findings of the most ancient pollen were found here, in the Río Salado Cave and in the White Cave. This makes it all the more significant that the campesinos can no longer produce large quantities of corn due to the lack of government subsidies. But at least we can be self-sufficient and not have to buy genetically modified corn from the United States.
NAFTA's policies pit two systems against each other, U.S. subsidized agribusiness and the small-scale, mostly manual farming of the Mexican campesinos. While the Midwest can claim the largest corn production in the world, Dr. Ignacio Chapela is placing his bets for the future of agriculture on small farmers in his native Mexico.
If we as humanity stand a chance to deal with ourselves and with that thing that we call biology or nature, it is not by looking up to what's happening in the American Midwest. It is by looking at what's happening here in those very, very marginalized examples of relationships. I think it is from those examples that we hopefully at some point will have to draw to survive in places like the Midwest in the U.S., you know, when the soil and the water and the human fabric there too has been exhausted. We'll have to come to places like this and learn from here, or try to remind ourselves how it was that it worked, to put it back together.
The amount of resources and influence that policymakers within the U.S. government have dedicated to biotechnology could give the impression that the future of global food security is a race. But there's an old saying in some of the communities here, which perhaps can explain why local campesinos aren't rushing to jump on the biotechnology bandwagon. We're not in a hurry because we have a long way to go. For FSRN, I'm Shannon Young with Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca, Mexico.
You've been listening to an FSRN documentary, Corn at the Crossroads, Free Trade, Migration, and Modified Genes in the Cradle of Maize, produced by Shannon Young and Vladimir Flores. Special thanks to producer Tina Gysi and Antonio Ortiz for technical production. You can get a copy of this or any other FSRN documentary by visiting our website at www.fsrn.org. I'm Aura Bogado. Thanks for listening, and join us tomorrow when we return to our regularly scheduled newscast.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the inaugural Portland Youth Poet Laureate Project on Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m., 12 of Portland's poetry ambassadors will compete to become the Portland Youth Poet Laureate. The event will take place in the Artist Repertory Theater, 1515 Southwest Morrison in Portland. Again, that's Portland Youth Poet Laureate Project, a program of Spit Right, Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m. at the Artist Repertory Theater, 1515 Southwest Morrison in Portland. More information.